Good morning, Delaware. Welcome to Off the Shelf. It's great to have you here. Thank you for joining us. We have a great show today. Our guest is author Martha Hall Kelly, whose novel Sunflower Sisters is on the New York Times bestseller list. Yay!
Woo-hoo!
And who will be the guest with Kate Quinn this coming Thursday for a Zoom presentation. And we are really looking forward to that. Good morning. Martha, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. How about you?
We're doing wonderfully here in Delaware. Good morning, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm great. I survived the crazy weather we've had this week.
Yeah, it has been just blooming nuts here. I mean, who said we needed more winter?
Nobody said that. Nobody.
Yeah, I know. And cold. And,
Old Man Winter did say that.
Yeah, but I think Old Man Winter doesn't get a vote here.
No.
Well, in Ohio he does, right?
Nobody asked him.
I guess so. Anyway, I'm just delighted to have Martha Hall Kelly here. Her new book is called The Sunflower Sisters. It is the third of a trilogy about the Woolsey and Faraday families. The first one was Lilac Girl. Second was Lost Roses. These have all been New York Times bestsellers. And I'm just delighted to have you here. Give us a quick overview, if you can, about what The Sunflower Sisters is about.
Oh, sure. Most people know me from my first novel, Lilac Girls, about Caroline Faraday and her fight to champion the cause of the so-called rabbits, Polish women that had been operated on by the Nazis at Ravensbrück concentration camp. And when I stumbled onto that story way back in 2000, I started researching Caroline. And this book is about Caroline's great-grandmother, Jane Eliza Woolsey, from whom everything came down to Caroline Faraday, all of her philanthropy. And she was a staunch abolitionist, mm-hmm. and had seven daughters and one son, and raised them as a single mother.
Oof.
And her middle daughter, Georgie, became a nurse in the Civil War, and it's her story.
She is an incredible character. I mean, actually, the three women who narrate this story are all fascinating. They're so different. Georgie, of course, is a real person based on a real historical character. The other two,
yes.
Talk a little bit about Gemma and Anne Mae Wilson.
Well, my other two books have three women narrators, and I thought I'd do the same thing for this last book about Caroline's family. And I wanted to, since the Woolsey family, they were staunch abolitionists, I wanted to have an enslaved girl on a tobacco plantation and also the mistress of that plantation. So Gemma is the enslaved girl. She's 16 and lives on my fictitious Peeler Plantation in Maryland, which was a border state, of course.
Mm-hmm.
And then Anne Mae Wilson Watson is the terrible plantation mistress, who is just horrible to Gemma.
She's just generally horrible.
Mm.
She's a really, she is one tough character.
Do you think?
Some
people are telling me that she's their favorite character. It's funny. You
well,
never know.
Villains are always more interesting than good guys. Let's face it. But my gosh, yeah.
Oh, definitely.
But I think it's really amazing. The they're so well drawn. The characters are so well and interestingly fully drawn. That at the end, I kept thinking, I would love to know what happens to Gemma. How does she evolve during, first during Reconstruction and then during the Jim Crow era? Mm. Because she was just such an interesting and tough character. It was really interesting to see that.
That sounds like novel number seven.
There we go. Yeah.
I have to tell you, the opening of your book got me right at the beginning when it starts with the slave auction. I lived in Charleston, South Carolina for 7 years, and I know exactly where you were describing. Mm. And I could
on Selma Street. Yeah.
I could hear the cart. I could hear the sound of that the kid pulling that cart and the two women just being totally shocked by what they were seeing. And you had me right from the first few pages. So
I'm so glad. And that all came from a real letter. I read almost 1,000 letters in the archives at the Bellamy Faraday House from Jane Eliza to her seven daughters, and that's one of them. They actually were in Charleston for a social event and had no idea that the slave market was there. They stumbled on it, and they spoke with an enslaved woman through the iron gates as the slave auction was going on, and her children were being sold from her. the most incredibly moving letter.
And just an incredibly moving opening to a book, too. I'll tell you that. Mm-hmm. That had me. Uh-huh. It was really good. I have to ask you, Gemma is an enslaved woman. She's a young girl, really, 16. Did you have any trepidation about writing in the voice of an enslaved person?
You know, a little bit. I wrote it so long ago, 5 years ago, that it was kind of before a lot of the social things that are happening now were happening. I have always written from the point of view of, in all the other books, a young person. And I just thought if I researched it enough and I really was careful about my facts, that it would ring true. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had one person say anything to me about that. So, you know, any readers and any reviews or anything. And so I'm really happy that people are learning about slavery from a whole new point of view. I really wanted to go at it and really show the horrors of it and not whitewash it like sometimes I think happens in some books.
I think I couldn't agree with you more about that. I was looking at I have not read Lilac Girls or Lost Roses yet, but the theme of women and how they deal with the aftermath of war seems to, or revolution in case of Lost Roses, seems to run through your writing. Is that something that you've always been interested in, or did that just develop as you started with Lilac Girls?
You know, I stumbled on Lilac Girls, the story. I wasn't a writer. I wasn't, I was a retired copywriter. And writing that story, I kind of inherited World War II, which, you know, was a wonderful thing to inherit. I had never been a history student. I never liked history in school. But once I started digging into it from a female point of view and from Caroline's point of view and the whole National Socialism thing and Ravensbrück concentration camp, I found it fascinating. So in my other books, I kind of gravitated to that, in Lost Roses to World War I, of course. And then, in this book to the Civil War, there was no way to write about this family without writing about the Civil War because they were such an important part of it. I read somewhere that when the Woolsey family, when they gave up their toys, they took up politics. So it was a huge part of their lives, and I had to show Gettysburg.
Yeah. Oh, the descriptions of Gettysburg, a place I toured a couple of years ago, that really just rang true too. The feeling of being there, and again, it's the aftermath. It's not so much the battle, although one of the characters does get injured. Well, several of the characters get injured during the battle. It's the aftermath, and it's like women perpetually having to clean up the mess that the men make in war, and yet it was not easy for a woman to be a nurse in 1863, was it?
Oh my goodness, no! I had no idea, honestly. I mean, I knew from history in school that it wasn't easy for the nurses, of course, the first nurses, but to really dig into Georgie's story, and you know, she wasn't really eligible to be a nurse for the Sanitary Commission. And this was the first nurses in the United States. But she worms her way in there. And it was all male nurses. And they held on to their jobs for dear life because if they were not male nurses, you know, far behind the battle lines, they had to go to war.
What's the worst alternative?
Yeah.
Right, exactly. So they badgered the female nurses and hoping that they would quit. And they were a lot stronger than these men realized, especially the Woolsey women. They did not take anything. They were the original kind of badass women. Their mother raised them to be that way. It was really fun writing about that. And Georgie actually says in her letters that there wasn't one doctor who was kind to her during the whole thing. And they really, they provided a huge service to the doctors.
But they
really were not appreciated at all.
Yeah, she writes the manual for the nurses to follow, And then one of the doctors takes it and publishes under his own name. I mean, it's like,
yes.
Kind of reminded me of Big Eyes. I mean, just, you know, how can you get it? It's so unbelievable in today's context, and yet you know it happened, and there it is. So it was...
Yeah, all sorts of terrible things. You know, her sister, too, Mary, one of the seven sisters, wrote these incredible poems. What today we would say is going viral. Mm-hmm. She had a poem called A Rainy Day at Camp, and she was not allowed to say that she wrote it. She was a woman, and everyone assumed it was a man because it was written from the point of view of a soldier. Mm-hmm. And Winslow Homer painted a painting inspired by the poem. Every soldier had it in their pocket going to war, but Mary Woolsey could never say that she wrote it. Oh. So it was a really hard time for women.
Yeah, their roles were so circumscribed, and any violation of it just seems to have brought down the entire social structure on people.
Absolutely.
So
Georgie wrote a book as well, and she was allowed to say that she wrote it, but it was it was called 3 Weeks at Gettysburg. I guess that's a spoiler for people that haven't read the book, because now we realize that she ends up at Gettysburg, but I think that's on the jacket cover anyway.
I think so, yeah. So. Well, I have to thank you again, Martha Hall Kelly. The book is The Sunflower Sisters. New York Times bestseller, and we are so looking forward to having you and Kate Quinn as our co-guests on Thursday, April 29th, 7 o'clock, for the Friends of the Library. Tickets are available at DelawareLibraryFriends.org. You can get tickets there. We also have a special package that we'll be talking about in the second half of the show with Fat Girls Bakery. Mm-hmm. So that sounds like fun, too. But I do want to thank you for being here. We are looking forward to seeing and basically to hear you and Kate interview each other while I throw in the questions that come in on chat and everything. And I'm going to throw one.
It's going to be so fun.
I'm going to throw one question out at you right now, because this is both books are three strong women as the narrators, but both of them have some mothers in there that make Medea look like, you know, Mother of the Year. And I just want to know what you guys have against mothers.
There's some good mothers too. Come on, George.
There are some good mothers.
Some lovely,
yes.
Lovely mothers.
Yes. Georgiana's mother, Mrs. Woolsey, is just amazing. So anyway, so
yeah, she makes up for all the bad ones.
There you go.
I think so. Yes. So Martha Hall Kelly, thank you again for joining us, and we look forward to talking to you this coming Thursday, April 29th at 8 o'clock. So thank you.
Thanks, George.
We'll talk to you then. Okay, we're going to come back and talk a little bit more about Fat Girls Bakery, Friends of the Library, their flower sale, all sorts of other cool things. So whatever you do, stay tuned. And welcome back to Off the Shelf. Ah, that was fun. I really enjoyed talking to Martha Kelly. She's Martha Hall Kelly. First, I screw up the time of the thing, and then I can't even pronounce her name properly. I'm so glad that she's no longer on the phone, so I don't have to apologize to her, too. I right before the break, I mentioned that this was at 8 o'clock on the April 29th. It's not. It's at 7 o'clock.
That's all right.
7 to 8 o'clock is the time on it. It's only an hour. Yeah, but don't tune in at 8 o'clock, because I'd hate for you to miss it. Because after talking to Kate Quinn last week and Martha Hall Kelly this week, I think we're going to have some fun.
So much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and I love our friends so much. They pulled this together they have fun too. Mm-hmm. You know, they found these two books about these historical fiction with these women, and then both with flowers in the title.
There you go.
So we're feeling like spring. So they figure, why not throw in a flower fundraiser with Fort Myer? Mm-hmm. And that's happening, and that's successful. And like I said, it's going to replace all of the flowers that I've already killed from winter.
And the ones that are going to, die. A long lingering death after this lousy weather we've had this week.
Right.
But we also have to thank Gene Whitlinger, who has been amazing, has worked with publishers in the past and has really helped connect the Friends and the Library with these authors.
He's great authors.
I mean, who else gets two New York Times bestselling authors together at the same time for $5?
Within a handful of months of their novel's debut.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think the Rose Code was published on the 9th of March, and the Sunflower Sisters was published on the 30th of March, and we're getting them on the 29th of April.
While they're still on the bestseller list.
That's amazing.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I just
And we would be remiss.
Thank you, Gene, and thank you, Friends.
if we didn't mention the special, so you can buy your.
Please talk about the special.
You can buy a another. You know, just like we did when we talked with the Brilliant Life of Eudora Honeyset, and we had the Eudora Yummies.
Yes, we did.
We're working with another bakery this time around. This is Fat Girl Bakery in Lewis Center, and they have a treat box that you can buy for them. $20. It is going to include 4 iced sugar cookies, 1 large fudge brownie, 1 vanilla cake pop, and 2 vanilla macarons.
I am so hungry.
It is going to be amazing. They also have 3 different days you can pick it up. You can pick it up in the store April 27, 28, 29. They're open 9 to 5. And Angela Cox and I, we have a plan. We're going to order our box. We're also going to go in the store and pick up. And, you know, we just might happen to see other things while we're in the store that we need to take home with us.
You really think that could happen?
They'd just be calling our names, you know? And then, of course, the books are being sold through a local bookseller. It is... Remind me.
Oh, it's the one in Westerville.
Birdie B.
Thank you.
It is Birdie B Books in Westerville. There it is. It was very at the bottom of my email. Birdie B Books in Westerville. They're donating 20% of the proceeds to the Friends of the Library, and they're going to come with a signed book plate.
Oh, that's great.
So it's really, really phenomenal. Lots of local support with whatever you do. Tickets are on sale for $10. And if you're a member of the Friends, you get them with a discount code for $5. You can still join the Friends anytime between now and Thursday.
You know, people complain about not having good, strong female role models in movies or in TV or things. But I tell you, there are 6 strong women in these 2 books that are just amazing. One of them is absolutely vile, but she's fascinating. What she does is, she is the mistress of this plantation, and she is a terrible person, but she's a fully drawn character that you will not forget.
Yeah, I love how Martha was like, people tell me they like her. I want to know who those people are.
Well, it's like I say, the villains are usually more interesting than the heroes.
Mm-hmm.
In this case, Georgie Woolsey's pretty interesting too, though.
Mm-hmm.
They're all flawed. That's the interesting thing. All of these characters are flawed. They're not paragons. All of them have issues. They have problems. They have... things that they do that you just go, why on earth would you do something that stupid? And then you think, oh, I probably would have done the same thing. Mm-hmm. So
right, yeah. If they're too clean, if they're too perfect, then it's just bleh.
Then it's
boring.
It's Mary Poppins who you get the fun out of it because she is so perfect that that's actually a character flaw.
Right.
Practically perfect in every way.
In every way.
So anyway, so you said you've been reading picture books this week.
Yes. Well, it's Earth Day. Earth Day was yesterday.
Yep.
And so if your kid is in preschool, daycare, elementary school, they might have even had a whole week of Earth Week celebrations. I come to you today with a couple updated takes on some good Earth Day books.
All right.
This one is so cute. It's called The Lumberjack's Beard, and it's by Duncan Beatty. And it's basically about this this lumberjack. It's his job to cut down a whole bunch of trees. And so he goes out in the forest one day. He cuts down a whole bunch of trees, clears kind of that wing of the forest, and then he goes to bed to rest. He wakes up the next day. He cuts all the branches off the tree, and then he burns them, and then goes to bed to rest. And then later that night, or later that morning, he wakes up, and there are some animals knocking at his door who have been displaced because he has now taken out their homes. And so it starts with, you know, maybe just a squirrel, and he says, well, you can live in my beard, I guess. He has a very bushy beard, and so he offers up his beard as a home. And then it begins with a bird, and then it comes with a beaver and a porcupine, and you know, his beard is getting rather full, and he decides that, you know, maybe it would just be better if he goes ahead and shaves his beard and puts that on his front porch, and then they can kind of live in it as a den on his front porch. And then he realizes kind of the error of his ways, and he needs to maybe help just replenish and get some new homes back for these animals. So The Lumberjack's Beard, it's so cute. You can check it out now. There's also a YouTube video of Duncan actually reading the story, which is really entertaining. You can also look up the video that's associated with it for how to draw the lumberjack.
Oh, cool.
So that's a fun one, too. Another updated story that you might want to read this Earth Day is Sonia's Rainforest, and it's by Juana Martinez Neal. That name might sound familiar. She's a Caldecott Award-winning, or a Caldecott Honor and Siebert Medal winner. And this illustrates a young girl's day of play and adventure in the lush rainforests of Peru. Ooh. So she's in the Amazon rainforest, where it's always green and full of life. And, you know, the rainforest kind of calls to Zonia every morning. And she says hello to it in all of its different ways, and in the animals and the bugs and the wildlife. But one day, the call is a little bit different, and it sounds a little bit troubled. And so Zonia needs to figure out how to answer that call. And then, of course, there is always the classic, one of my favorites, Dr. Seuss's The Lorax.
Oh, I am the Lorax. I speak for the trees.
I love the Lorax so much. I love the Truffula trees so much so that my youngest daughter, she's my second born. I didn't have any giant baby showers or anything like that, but I wanted to get my friends together to still celebrate her being born. So we did a painting party with our local friend at Canvas Creations for You, Tricia, and we all painted Truffula trees. And then because so many times you do those painting parties, you have this canvas of this thing you painted, and you're like, what am I going to do with this Truffula tree? I was like, you paint it, I want it. So they painted, and then I took all of the canvases of their Truffula trees, and so they're all hung in Willow's room.
Aww.
So my little Willow has all of her Truffula trees. But I actually really love, you can check out a million different versions of the Lorax, the story by Dr. Seuss, of course. But one of my favorites is the movie that came out in 2012.
Oh.
Ed Helms. Yeah, not the short, not
the
like 30-minute made for
short.
TV.
Yeah, right.
Nope, this is the feature that came out in 2012. Ed Helms is in it. Danny DeVito is a voice in it.
Danny DeVito looks like the Lorax.
Well, if it walks like a duck and talks like a duck. So that's one of my favorites. You can check that out. It's actually got a really amazing soundtrack. And so you can check the soundtrack out on Hoopla. So I'm just coming at you with some Earth Day picks this week.
Well, that's a good, perfect time for it.
Exactly.
So a couple of weeks ago, you mentioned a book in passing called Fraud of the Century by Roy Morris Jr., which is about the election of 1876. That sparked my interest because I've got interested in Reconstruction and the post-Civil War era. This is a really interesting book because we all know, in at least broad terms, that the 1876 election was one of the closest in American histories, came down to the electoral votes for three states, Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana, and was settled not actually by the Electoral College, not actually by the U.S. Senate, but by a congressional committee that was put together to decide who the winner was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
You talk about all that work to go into getting an election going down the drain just to have some committee decide who's going to be president.
Yeah.
But, you know, everything that seemed to play into the 2020 election is in play here in a Victorian era way.
It's fascinating.
The media becomes a villain because it is so partisan. You're either a Republican newspaper or you're a Democrat newspaper, and you can't see any good side to the other side at all.
Mm-hmm.
There's no such thing as journalistic neutrality at that
moderate
point.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so you get headlines screaming which guy won immediately after the election, even though neither one of them really knew who had won. Rutherford B. Hayes went to bed election night thinking he'd lost, because there was no way that they were going to get those votes from those last three states. And he was very calm about it, very even-tempered. Both he and Samuel Tilden, his Democratic opponent, were aghast at some of the political chicanery that was going on in order to try to win the election for them. But they didn't stop it on either side. They were both really afraid of a lot of violence because there had been violence leading up to the election, a lot of voter suppression, sounding familiar again, a lot of ways of a lot of dirty tricks, things like that, to try to keep people from voting or to at least keep the people who might have voted for the other side from voting. And again, same as some of the same things we saw in the 2020 election, where the down ticket didn't match what happened at the top of the ticket, and people are wondering why that happened. So this book really traces Hayes's life, Samuel Tilden's life. Tilden had been a reform politician for many years. He was a lawyer who got rich defending railroads before the Civil War. He really helped break up the Boss Tweed Ring in Tammany Hall in New York during the end of the 1860s, and was basically the popular choice for 1876. They really thought that the Democrats were going to win that election, the first one since 1856, because people were so fed up with all of the corruption during the Grant administration. So they really thought that that Tilden was going to have a walkover, and it didn't turn out that way for a lot of different reasons. So it all came down to this commission that they put together, and basically the trade-off was they said, the Democrats said, you can take the White House if you pull the troops out of the South. And basically, that was the end of Reconstruction. And that's what happened. Tilden backed off. They gave the electoral votes from Florida, South Carolina, and Louisiana to Hayes, and he won 185 to 184.
And now we have the darling of Delaware City, Ohio.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And that's not many cities can claim a president.
Mm-hmm.
And we're one of them.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how. It was Hayes had a good, clean administration. He was an honest person, right to the core. He was so honest he wouldn't even vote on election day for himself because he didn't think that was fair.
Aww.
So that didn't stop Tilden from voting for himself.
I wouldn't. I mean, I would vote for myself.
I would too, in a heartbeat. If I'm going to put all that work into trying to get elected,
I get one.
Darn it, I'm going to vote for myself.
I get one.
Yeah, exactly. So, but it really was the death knell for Reconstruction. The federal troops were pulled out. The white citizens were able to take over again and basically institute Jim Crow, the black codes, and all those sorts of things that they'd been working on through the end of the 1860s and the beginning of the 1870s. So it was and that's why it's frequently called the fraud of the century. And it was talked about in the same apocalyptic terms that we talked about in 2020. So
right.
it's a fascinating story. The book is rather dry. You know, it's not Tom Clancy, but it's history and it's well told in here. So I can recommend it. It's Fraud of the Century by Roy Morris Jr. And check it out if you're interested in Delaware history. Not a lot about Delaware in here because by the time he was running, he was living in Columbus as governor.
Yeah, just born.
Yep, so.
Born here.
Anyway, so we've only got a couple of seconds left. What we got coming up besides Martha and Kate coming
Well,
up?
We've still got our virtual teen job fair running.
Right.
And I promised that each week I would talk about one employer who is hiring. So
right.
This week I want to give a quick shout out to Goldfish Swim School. They're located in Lewis Center. They hire at age 15. And they have a number of different positions available at their Lewis Center location. They're looking for swim teachers. They're looking for deck assistants. They're looking for just general team members, and they're looking for lifeguards. So if you have a teen in your home who is lifeguard certified, who also wants to get into teaching some little ones how to swim, I would definitely apply at Goldfish Swim School. I can vouch. I have had one daughter go through that program at Goldfish Swim School, and where I was an idiot and could teach her nothing, Goldfish Swim School taught her how to swim.
That's great. Cool. So yeah, that'll be going on throughout the month
through
teens.
The end of May.
Through the
teens.
End of May, excuse
mm-hmm.
me. Okay, great. So yeah, since we can't do it in person, we can do it online and keep it going for a lot longer. So.
Yep, find it on our events page, DelawareLibrary.org.
Okay, great. Well, thank you very much, Nicole.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Gage, as always. Great having you running the board.
My pleasure.
We look forward to seeing you on Thursday with our author program, and we will see you in the stacks.